You're listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Rylan. We have the weekend's cinema choices up for discussion today. And on our silver screen is Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates, Wiener Dog and The Wave. And talking me through all three is the film critic Tara Judah. Tara, welcome as ever to Midori House. It does pain me to suggest that we need to begin with Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates. Before we lay into it, I think, let's hear a bit of a clip.
Get loose now.
Mom and Dad, what's going on here?
Over the years at our family gathering, you two show up and you ruin it. I want you to bring a date to your sister's wedding. We don't want you showing up stag and riling each other up.
We don't rile each other up.
We never get riled up.
We'll shape up for you, Jeannie. We gotta find the right girls for this. Where do we even go?
What? We're about to do something awesome.
Right, sounds quite atrocious. How atrocious is it, Tara?
It's a very silly film. This is indebted to films like Wedding Crashers, which it wishes it were. I think it's also got its hooks laid into things like The Hangover and the Judd Apatow Wave. I think it's kind of riding on the coattails of that. It also, though, is trying to do something that a lot of the kind of new female gross-out movies are doing. So I think it's also pulling on Bridesmaids, Trainwreck, The To-Do List. But like a lot of those films, it is still a very silly R-rated rom-com. There are moments of enjoyment in this film. I think the highlights are Aubrey Plaza and Anna Kendrick, their performances, and I think they're, I guess, kind of embodiment of the female gross out, kind of taking back some of the agency in terms of screen space and screen time. But Adam Devine, is who we've seen in Pitch Perfect as the bumper character, is dreadfully overacting in this film. It's really painful to watch at times. Zac Efron is doing as well as he can with the material. Ultimately, it's a really silly film. I think there are a few moments of enjoyment, but overall, I mean, you know, this is kind of disposable gross-out cinema.
I think Zac Efron is actually quite talented, but it seems that he's kind of stuck in these sorts of roles for quite a while now, and probably because there aren't many other types of films being made at the moment. We seem to have such an overcrowded marketplace of this style of movie, the gross-out comedies that seem to have a little bit of romance thrown in there, but it's not really about that. It's all just about this silly humour. It seems ripped from a TV schedule back in the 90s or something. It's not very stylish. It's not very classy. Why are our cinemas clogged with this style of humour?
I mean, I think the only positive thing we can take from this is that there is at least more screen space for women, but it is still subject to the homophobic, transphobic, racist agenda of a lot of these Hollywood films. And I think part of that is that, you know, that's the kind of if it ain't broke, don't fix it discourse that keeps Hollywood making and churning out the same stuff over and over again, even though it is broken, it does need fixing. It comes from, based on a true story where two guys, the Stengel brothers, actually needed dates to a wedding. So they put it up on Craigslist and got a ton of emails and responses, and then did a national tour and sold the rights to, they wrote a book and then they sold the rights to make this film. So there is an element of kind of gimmickry in there, I guess, in terms of the true story, but it ultimately falls flat.
These styles of films, do you think it's a fad? Are we going to move on and then start finding some other types of films being made to fill this sort of void, or are these here to stay for a little while yet?
I think slapstick tradition is something that people love. It's not necessarily my bag, but I think it's probably going to stick around.
All right, well, let's move on now to The Wave. Before we go any further, let's hear a clip of that one.
I know that Geiranger is not the world's center, but it's safe. I'm at home.
Now we've decided. This will be good. Maybe you can get a little more attention than I feel.
So, Tara, this is set in a Norwegian village that's threatened when a large, massive rock tumbles in and sets off what seems to be a rather large tsunami. Talk us through what's happening here.
This film is kind of like a mix between the Icelandic TV series Trapped and the Danish television series The Killing. And I'm not trying to group all Scandinavian culture in together, but there is something about the fact that we've got... So in those two TV series, you've got one which is sort of the idea that everybody's trapped in this very secluded space and can't get out. And the other is about a woman who's hoping to move on from this town that she's living in but can't because of something that's taken place that's pulled her back in. And that's essentially the premise for this Norwegian film, which was Norway's submission for the 88th Academy Awards for 2015. They weren't nominated, but they did submit this film as their entry. And in this film, we've got the main character, Christian, who's played by Christopher Yona, and He and his family are about to move on to another town. They're in this very small space and they've lived there for a long time. He's a geologist. He's been working on monitoring the mountains. They're at the foot of a mountain in a valley, and there has been problems there before in terms of avalanche and then, you know, sort of tsunami. And that's one of the things that really is genuinely a problem if you live in these places, is that there is that fear of, you know, what would happen if it floods. And what this film does is actually kind of interesting because it is based on a real life incident that happened in Talfjord in 1934, and 40 people were killed. And there were a couple of instances where this sort of natural disaster took place, so in 1905 and also 1936. So it's taking a real-life story from Norway and blending it with this idea of Hollywood blockbuster genre movie, because the filmmaker really admired films like Twister and Armageddon and wanted to make a disaster film, but he wanted to take that and marry it with the Norwegian heritage, I guess. So we have this real-life kind of disaster reimagined on a grand scale, and it's really got the look and budget of a Hollywood movie. There's some very impressive CGI. I think one of the most remarkable things visually about this film is that we do get a real sense of space. The aerial shots that establish the parameters of this village and, you know, where the people will be confined is beautiful. So we do get a really good sense of space and imagery in this film. It's also really impressive that all of the cast did their own stunts. Jona, actually, the lead character who plays the lead actor who plays Christian, actually had training so that he could hold his breath underwater for 3 minutes.
Oh, God, because how awful.
There is a scene where that is required. And I remember thinking when I saw the film, like, oh, that's ridiculous. People can't hold their breath for that long underwater. But he was doing his own stunts and he did actually do the training so that it has that kind of sense of realism. But where this film falls down is that it does have the same markings of a Hollywood disaster film, in that it is all about heteronormativity. It's all about this one family. It's all about saving them. There's some questionable actions that take place in the series of, I mean, not to spoil the, you know, the kind of three-act structure that you're used to already, but, you know, they get trapped. They almost get away. They come back. Other people are dispensed. Obviously, other characters are not central to this nuclear family that we're following. There's family tensions and unhappy, angsty teenage kid. We need to have those things resolved while the narrative's going. I found those parts really labored, and I think it knows that it belongs to that tradition of filmmaking. It's not trying to do anything else. I don't think that its intention is to kind of reach beyond that, but there is something really frustrating about the fact that the look of this film is really impressive, but it doesn't have any meat to it in terms of character development. They're really broadly drawn types, and there's just nothing in it other than the regular values that we see time and again.
I always feel somewhat disappointed when films outside of Hollywood subscribe to that Hollywood-esque ending style of creation. Just finally on this film, is it beautiful though? Because it sounds like the setting could present a lot of opportunities to create some stunning imagery. Do you really get that sort of beauty on the screen across?
I think you do in the beginning of the film, certainly with those aerial shots that set up the parameters of the space. And I think, again, some of the CGI is very impressive. I mean, you know, this kind of imagining of a giant mountain avalanching and causing a tsunami, I think it's done quite well. The second half of the film, I mean, is in much more enclosed spaces. As you can imagine, anything in which we have a disaster or is kind of, it's a shrinking narrative. So you start out really broad, you have big spaces, you have a broad range of characters and a storyline, and that increasingly closes in as the acts go on until eventually you just have very few people left in a very confined space, and that's where the kind of suspense, or I guess what would be the nail-biting edge-of-your-seat stuff comes in.
Well, that is The Wave, and it's out now across the world. Now, Tara, our final film today is Wiener Dog, which, of course, is the new film by Todd Solondz. I won't try to describe this film just yet. Let's hear a clip first.
Heel!
Damn it.
Heel!
Mother...
Heel! Heel, mother... Heel, mother...
A dog is not human. It's an animal. Nature doesn't care about them. It's sad but true. We're a dog's only friend.
Okay, so that is a clip from Wiener Dog, the new film from Todd Solondz. He's got a long and rich history in the cinema. Tara, I was having a bit of a chat to Todd on the cinema show quite recently. Our listeners can catch up on that over at our website. First of all, give me your take on this film. When I saw it, I thought it's a quite a cute little assemblage of different chapters in a dog's life going from one home to the next. There are clues to some higher meaning or some deeper sense of some profound meaning here. What did you get from that?
I actually got quite a lot from this film. I think it's multi-layered, and that's something I think that actually is probably more interesting about this than some of Solondz's earlier work. His breakout film, Welcome to the Dollhouse, is obviously very much loved. It's still, you know, held up as a kind of icon of art house cinema of the 90s. It was really his breakout, and it was really breakout of that genre at the time. I think it really was one of the kind of landmark films that you could point to as what we think of as art house. And this film is, in terms of his oeuvre, is much more a return to form. This is a return to some of the softness and sensitivity of Welcome to the Dollhouse. He's very well known for his nihilistic approach and misanthropic view on life. And most of his characters are either really depraved or they're treated really horribly. They're very often not, they don't have redeeming qualities very often. And I think that this film has some of the softness that we see in the first film. And that's actually because this is kind of a spin-off from Welcome to the Dollhouse. So Dawn Wiener, who was the central character in Welcome to the Dollhouse, appears again in this film. And she's played by Greta Gerwig. So this is as if she's imagined as having grown older. And the character, her section of the story is actually a development on the earlier film. And if anyone remembers in Welcome to the Dollhouse, there is a section where the young girl's bullied a lot, that they all are shouting at her, "Wiener dog, wiener dog, wiener dog." And this is kind of a theme that comes up again in his other work. I think there's a real richness to this in terms of if you're a Todd Solondz fan, because there's also a Wiener family in the Palindromes film. There are constant references to some of this stuff as we go along. And we're really used to seeing, if you've watched his other work, ensemble casts and also the kind of transitory nature of what represents a character. So Palindromes, for example, has multiple girls and multiple actresses playing the one character, which is disarming, but that is, you know, the approach to it. We have films like Life During Wartime, which is an unofficial sequel to Happiness, where we have some of the same characters. So Ali Sheedy plays the character that Laura Flynn Boyle played in Happiness. So we're very used to Todd Solondz kind of substituting people in. And in a sense, that means that you're comfortable right away if you know his work, because you're in the same world. You haven't really departed from any of his other films. But what I think is different about this film, and I think it sets up at the beginning that it's going to be very nihilistic, is that we do get a sense of softness coming through. He does allow you to feel for some of the characters, not all of them. Some of them are pretty abhorrent. And I think it helps that, they're all, you know, big stars. We know a lot of these people very well. Danny DeVito, Greta Gerwig, Julie Delpy, you know, Kieran Culkin, Zosia Mamet, Ellen Burstyn, who's fantastic in this film.
She is wonderful, isn't she?
She's really brilliant in this film. So there's a lot going on in terms of kind of building that empathy. But at the same time, it's still a series of vignettes. So what we don't get is very deep character development. I would argue sometimes we don't really get that in any of Solondz's films. There's very few where he gives the character a kind of real journey. I think Welcome to the Dollhouse and maybe Dark Horse, which was not quite so good, are the two that do that the best. But we don't really get enough time with them to develop full empathy. And that can be a little bit problematic. So the only thing that really takes us through is the Wiener dog, this little dog who kind of travels from situation to situation, gets passed on from one owner to another. Sometimes we don't know why or how, but she has these different owners who she's sort of hanging around with. Now, I know that Todd Solondz in your interview, Ben, said that he really thinks about the Wiener dog character as somewhere between Ohazar, Balthazar and Benji, which is just insane to think about.
It's quite insane, yeah.
That's a kind of mad
somehow
place.
From him, it sounds, it made complete sense when he said that, though. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Well, but the interesting thing about the journey of the dog, if you think about it too, is that actually I think it's a commentary on the politics of our time. So if we think about Life During Wartime was a film that was really about forgiving and forgetting, then Wiener Dog could be the film that's about the consequences of what happens when we do that. So we start with this dog who's caged. We see the dog being taken by a kind of, in inverted commas, good family. there's a lot of fun made at their idea of clean living. And then the dog is, you know, literally spayed, sent to be murdered when, you know, there's kind of an explosive mistreatment of the animal through ignorance, not through malice. But then it's sent to be murdered. Dawn's the one that, you know, kind of saves the dog. But then she's just passed along. And, you know, at the risk of giving a couple of little spoilers away, so tune out now if you don't want to hear them, you know, she also kind of takes on the role of a potential suicide bomber. Then is sent into an old age care home, neglected. And at the final moment when we think, oh, she's going to break free for her freedom, she's finally got her moment of freedom, and Todd Solondz just
horrible
won't let you enjoy that. And then we kind of, at the very end, we're just looking back at this sort of caged animal again, this idea that freedom, you know, isn't possible. And I think that that's actually a biting satire on the politics of our time, and what we're actually doing to people across the world. So I think there is a richness in this film. I think there's a little bit of allegory. There's definitely some nihilism and some bleak moments and some hard things to kind of enjoy. But there's also humour, especially with there's a stunning intermission for people who like comedy and who like their sort of nods towards old age cinema.
Yes. Oh, I mentioned at the start of that there were hints of something more profound happening here, and you've taken those hints and knitted a complete sweater. I do appreciate that. You've actually made me want to see the film again, funnily enough, just to see that moment with Alan Burstyn towards the end of the film that you just hinted at. Tara, thank you very much for joining us today. Wiener Dog is out now in Europe and the US, but sorry, Russia, you'll have to wait until September for some reason. And that brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks to my guest, Tara Judah. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. My producer was Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time on Monday when we'll be rounding up the week in art. But for now, thanks for listening and goodbye.